101.5 The Hawk.
Everybody, hope you're having a great Tuesday night. Thanks so much for tuning in again. And tonight I'm speaking with Spencer Bridgewater, who is the bassist of Toronto hip hop / funk group Mauve Groove. You can find Mauve Groove on Instagram, Facebook, and all streaming services as Mauve Groove. And thanks so much for joining, Spencer. Great to have you.
Thanks very much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, anytime. So I guess first things first, how would you describe your style as a bassist?
Oh, we want to get right into it.
Yeah, definitely.
My style as a bassist, I definitely draw from a lot of different influences. Mm-hmm. I think it's also maybe changed a little bit over time. I'm mostly self-taught, and so all my influences come from like listening to records and watching bands play at concerts and stuff like that, and being, you know, seeing someone I admire and being like, oh, I want to try that. I want to do something, whatever they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think my favorite, I guess, inspirations or streams of inspiration have come from people who I felt were different. Like, they had their own unique playing style that I was really attracted to. Like, I looked at someone like Les Claypool from Primus or something, and you know, you would say, wow, he doesn't play it like anyone else plays it. What's he doing differently? So I would try and draw from that, for example. Or I see someone like Charles Mingus or something like that. Like, wow, the way he approaches music, or like what he's trying to do when he's writing up a bass line, is really interesting. How can I steal from that? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To develop a style.
Mm-hmm.
So just sort of, I guess that's really the best way to put it, is I steal from a lot of different people in a way that blends together so no one really knows who exactly it is, and then I can call it my own style, selfishly. Yeah,
definitely. Do you play other instruments as well?
Yep, I play a little bit of guitar, a little bit of drums, and I used to play brass like a long time ago, but I don't think I don't even remember how, if I pick some up. You're probably making noise out of it, but that's about it.
Who are your biggest musical influences?
Right now or all time?
You could do both.
All time, I would say I really, really like, I think one of the first bands that got me into playing bass was Rage Against the Machine. Love their work. Probably my favorite all-time band. Tim Coverbird is one of those guys who you just don't know how he can make such a like low and like thumpy instrument sound so angry and aggressive, but it really drew me into it, and I was really excited. I would study his lines off like the first two records really diligently and try and piece together what he was doing and how he tried to make those sounds. I would say they're big inspiration there. That sort of like grew into a bunch of different directions. I really like Living Color. They were another sort of, I guess, contemporaries at the time, back in the late 80s through the 90s kind of thing. Their first two records I love so much. I think they're the coolest things. They're like, just from a performance standpoint, they had Muzz Killings on the bass. He was just a nasty player. He was super fun to watch, fun to listen to, break down his lines. Definitely a lot of influences from some more local, people as well. All the stuff from like Bad Bad Not Good, for instance, they're from Toronto. Definitely try and rip off them a ton. I think their style's really, I don't know if you've ever been to one of their concerts, but the way they sort of can put on a show that is fundamentally one of like, you know, a jazz concert where, you know, it's very demonstrative of technique, like virtuosic skill, and these guys are incredible players, but they do it in such a way that's full of like dynamic energy. And it really, I don't know, I felt myself really captured at those shows, and I wanted to emulate that. I thought it was a very cool sound. Those are probably some bigger names overall. I would say most recently, it's gotten a little more niche. Like, you find things, that people recommend, like small bands, or even like local bands and friends bands and stuff like that, that you see what they're doing, and you're like, whoa, they're getting really experimental, and I want to try and, you know, take inspiration from that. For instance, I really like this band called, from, I think they're from Austin, called White Denim, like a rock band, kind of like a little bit like fusion-y, a little like psychedelic rock kind of thing. They're sweet. I saw them at Lee's Palace in 2019, and that was like the best concert of the year for me. That was super cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have not seen Bad Bad, but I would love to.
I don't know what they're doing right now. I hope they're coming out with more music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I know that you've mentioned a couple times that a big factor in you pursuing music was a music camp that you attended around the age of like 8 or 9. How was your time there? What did you learn from that camp? And what was it about music that stood out for you?
Wow, that's going back to day one.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember I was very young, but I was with my cousins at the time in the summer. Basically, I was at my aunt and uncle's for like a few weeks, and they lived out in Ottawa at the time. And I don't know, I was just a kid that was, you could pretty easily convince me to try anything once. I thought, you know, let's just have fun with it kind of thing. So they sent us to music camp for a week, and we all got to like pick out an instrument, and they taught us how to play it. I took trombone. I thought it was awesome. I had no idea how to play it, but they would teach you, you know, like, they teach you like the basic scale, and they would show you like, I guess, super basic, sight reading and some exercises, and they'd make some games out of it. And it was just like a full day thing for a week.
Mm-hmm.
But it really like, I don't know, it sparked something in me. And I moved over. I like the trombone. I was like, this is too heavy though. So mm-hmm. I moved over to trumpet. When I got back to like school that year, I started playing. In like the school band, I thought trumpet was really cool, and I stuck with that until like all throughout high school. It just seemed very like formative. I sort of, for me personally, I jumped on it really quickly, and I just wanted to, I guess see where I could go with it kind of thing. But I never, I don't know, I never took like formal instruction kind of thing. I only took it throughout school. So I don't know how, I don't know if dedicated is like the right word to describe it. I was definitely inspired to create. For
mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. What did you listen to back then, or what did you listen to growing up?
Oh gosh. This could both date me and be very embarrassing depending mm-hmm. on what it did, but, back then, I don't even know. I used to listen like, I guess my like formative years for music was probably a little bit after that when I started getting into like, you know, the like mid 2000s scene where it was like a lot of post rock and alternative and stuff like that. Those mm-hmm. kind of bands. I love listening to like Bloc Party. I love like early Arctic Monkeys and stuff like that. A lot of like Brit, like post Brit rock that came over.
Right.
Stuff like Killers and the Kooks and stuff like that too. That was probably the like most, I guess, impactful genre sort of area, but yeah, it really ended up being everything too.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that what your parents listened to, do you think that what your family listened to, did that have an impact on your style growing up?
parents, listen to, they're pretty well versed overall. They're pretty, they have an open mind overall, I would say, but they, I think their regular listening schedule is a little bit maybe tamer than mine, or a little bit safer than mine.
Mm-hmm.
Like I jumped on, I pulled the like, you know, angsty 13, 14 year old, I'm going to get really into metal and like screamo and stuff like that. And I'll dive into that. And they thought, oh no, our son's like, our son's mm-hmm. really bad or angry at everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, it was just a great way to like, I guess, vent during those formative years. And I was really into it, but they're probably more into like, my dad's into like classic rock. My mom will listen to a wider variety of things. She's more into like, solo singers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like those initial influences impact your style today?
I mean, definitely. I think they have to. I think I was obviously really fortunate. I got a good exposure to a lot of different music early on, and I was surrounded by friends who sort of were in a similar boat. Like for me, even just coming up through, you know, like high school band, like high school jazz band, and going to music festivals and camps and everything like that was a great way to like meet people and, I don't know, get their take. Like, oh, I've never seen, or, you know, I've never played this instrument, but I can sort of piece it together in my head how it would fit in together if we jammed or if we played together kind of thing. And that's what I would end up doing. I'd be obsessed with like getting people to come over and, you know, say like, dude, let's go jam this weekend or something like that. And you know how it goes. It's just a bunch of kids in a garage or whatever, just chunking out chords and, you know, making stupid music, but it's fun and it gets you thinking about like how else you can approach it and what else you can do and like the kind of weird sounds that you want to eventually get to.
Yeah. Do you know at what age you officially picked up the bass?
I think it was 13, 14 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I really liked the idea playing guitar, and parents got my brother and I a guitar. And it was like some like cheap Epiphone knockoff, whatever. And I was like, I can't play this. I don't like it at all. The strings are so small. I can't like formulate chords in my head or anything. So I played it for about 6 months and I said, I don't know. I'm not really into this. And then for some reason, something just sparked. I went to like, I think it was at Long McQuaid, and tried out a bass or something. And I was like, wow, this is cool. Like, big and thumpy and makes a lot of like loud low end noises. It just feels like, I don't know, it feels powerful. And, I really wanted to try that. So I convinced my dad to buy me one of those like Fender Squire starter kits. And it comes with like a little amp, a little rumble amp, comes with a VHS. You know, it shows you like the beginner lessons. I don't think I ever unwrapped the foil from the VHS, but, I would just get to like chunking away on that. And I was really into that for, a couple years. I started like, I went to my music director at my school and I was like, can I switch from trumpet to bass? I like this better. He's like, yeah, okay, sure. Well, you let me do it for jazz band, not for concert band.
Mm-hmm.
So I took that away and that was awesome. And then a few years passed and I was basically like, you know, I think it's time for an actual instrument. And I saved up, I don't know, like $600 or something. We went to Steve's and I bought my Ibanez, which I use currently actually. It's been with me for a long time.
Mm, that's pricey at that age.
I saved up for like a year and a half to get that one.
I bet.
So excited.
Yeah, totally. Do you remember when you started creating music on your own? And do you happen to remember the first song you wrote?
Wow. I don't think I was creating a whole bunch when I first started. I don't really remember all that well. If I did, it wasn't very good. But think actually, I have, if you find, there's stuff on like my old computer where it's just, and it's also how I start off with like a bunch of songs. Even today, I'll start ideas off. It's basically just like, you know, a bass line or a bass loop or like a guitar chord or series of chords that you just put on a drum machine. And, I think I have a ton of them throughout, you know, years and years of demos and stuff like that. But I think I have some early, early stuff from maybe a few years in, maybe like 16. I don't really remember any of them. I don't think they're very good. I didn't really start getting into actual writing or something. I think I was mostly just like trying to copy the bands I was listening to. Mm-hmm. And being, oh, this is a great idea. I came up with this on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So probably not anything like meaningful or worthwhile that I could remember until I think, probably like once I started college, really. I started going to more and more shows and just watching and listening to sort of a wider variety of music, like things I got exposed to, meeting a bunch of people, at uni. And that opened a lot of doors for me, taking their sort of perspectives and experiences. And I channeled that. I was like, I want to start a band. So I picked up some friends and I said, you know, let's make funk music or let's make rock or something like that. And we ended up forming a band, which was a lot of fun. We got to play, you know, bars on the weekends for no money whatsoever, but we thought it was the greatest thing ever because we just got to play. That was probably the start of like the song writing experiences.
Do you remember the moment when you began to look at music as something more than a hobby?
Good question. I think there was definitely like an itch that wasn't being scratched after uni when I moved back to Toronto. This is before we started Moat Grove, and I was just like listening to a ton of music, that was really new to me. I felt like before hearing stuff like that I was listening to then, I looked back and I was like, wow, I was sheltered. Like I didn't even know any of this existed. And there's, yeah, something like I just couldn't get away from, which was I just wanted to get the ideas in my head out on paper, out onto tape or something like that, and put them out there. And it sort of shifted from, oh, this is, you know, a fun hobby I can do in the bars on the weekend to, I kind of want to like spend a lot more time, you know, crafting an image or crafting like a brand or some sort of like theme or something behind this body of work. And that's sort of how it grew into something a little bit bigger than that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call it a living right now, but I would call it, it's definitely satisfying that urge for sure.
Mm-hmm. How did your family react to you pursuing music? I know not a lot of families are totally supportive because of, you know, the nature of the industry. But how was your family or like close friends' reaction?
They're totally supportive. Mm-hmm. You get the, of course, like, even from your closest friends, I think you get the, like, you know, the one eyebrow raise where they look at you and basically say, like, you know, good for you, man. That's great. I'm happy you're, you know, following your passions and everything like that. Don't quit your day job kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fairness, I still have a day job. So, yeah,
mm-hmm.
there's a bridge there that, I don't necessarily want to get rid of just right yet, but, I don't know. Like, I think I like spending the time I do currently on my music, and as that takes up more time, you find that, I don't know, I think it gets harder and harder to justify calling it a hobby, because clearly it's something more, whatever you want to define it as, you know, be that a passion or a career or like a vocation or something like that. That I think that's more individual based on your own personal goals.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, like, certainly growing towards that, from where it was only a few years ago.
Did you attend music school?
I did not attend music school.
You did not.
I had like no formal musical training.
Yeah, that's impressive. So were you entirely self-taught then?
I am pretty much mostly self-taught. I took lessons when I was a very, very beginner starting out, which I highly recommend to anyone who's starting out on a new instrument. Definitely take lessons. The perspective you get from like a good teacher is worth way more than, you know, reading books for years. It's just not the same. You get that direct feedback, and I think it's super important. I recently took, obviously before the pandemic, but I wanted to take that part of my training a little bit more seriously. So I took a few sort of ad hoc lessons here and there, which gave me sort of a new perspective on, you know, like approaching just fundamentals and stuff like that, which was awesome. But yeah, the rest of it's like trying to dissect pieces that I hear, like slow them down, learn them, write them all out, notate them, mix them up, everything like that.
When did you meet the guys in Mauve Grove?
All at different times, actually. I first met Babak back. I had known him before him, but not very well, and we sort of met through a mutual friend. And then we were actually like jamming in our friend's basement, just the three of us together. This was in like 2016. And, we were just playing, you know, like three chord punk rock, having fun, making a lot of noise just in the heat of the summer. And then I knew about his background in music, and he has a lot of formal training. He's a composer. He's working on his PhD right now at U of T. Mm-hmm. And, he's got a great brain for it. And I basically pulled him aside and I was like, do you want to make something different than three chord punk, maybe? Just us two? And he's like, yeah, sure. So we started jamming a little bit, and then we were looking around for drummers, and he said he knew a guy, again, sort of like loosely through a friend, who ended up being our drummer right now, David. And so David came out, and right off the bat, it was just a great chemistry there. He's so fluid and, like technically insanely proficient. He's such a virtuoso himself. And that was like 6 to 8 months later kind of thing. And then CJ, we were just sort of jamming around on like the open mic scene at the time in Toronto. So we were playing, you know, a bunch of dive basements on Monday night, Sunday night, Tuesday night, whenever. Just cause we could, and it was a lot of fun. An excuse to like hang out with our other friends who wanted to hang in dimly lit basements with a lot of loud rock on a weeknight. And, CJ just happened to be there one of those nights a few months after that, maybe 4 months after that. And he asked, we were going on, I think I signed this up for like 1:30 in the morning or something like that. I don't know how I convinced myself to stay awake that late, but we did. And, basically like listened to us after a song, and then he asked if he could come up on stage and like join us for, you know, just a couple like impromptu sessions or tracks, and basically said, yeah, come on up. You know, he was meanwhile, he was vetting us from probably in the back of the room at the time. He had been doing a lot of like open mic circuit runs for a few years, just doing some solo stuff. And, I knew like, as he got up and we just played, I don't know, we were playing some sort of loop or something like that with some funky backbeat, and he just jumped right into it. I started rapping and singing over it, and I like looked over at the other guys and basically just said, we didn't say it on stage, but basically said like, I think this is our guy. And then I basically went up to him after and said, you know, are you doing anything? You want to come jam? You want to come hang out for a session or two? And he said, yeah, sure, whatever. Tried to blow us off, and then, you know, next week at practice, he shows up, and we go through a couple tracks, and it turns out he was, you know, ready to, I guess, try something with other people, and it ended up working out really well. The rest is history, basically. We ended up playing our first show all together, months later. I don't even know if it was that long. It was at the Silver Dollar Room, RIP. Well, kind of. I guess it's back now, sort of. Yeah, at the end of, what would that be? I guess going into 2017, I think. That sounds right. Yeah. And that's basically it.
Would you say that you and the other guys in Mauve Grove, do you share any musical influences?
Definitely. I think it helps geographically. Like, the three of us, except for CJ, grew up in Toronto. CJ grew up in the States. He grew up in Arizona. And he moved to Toronto several years back. But that being said, our tastes are all... We share a lot of overlap. It's kind of like this weird, like, Venn diagram thing where there's a lot of overlap, in that what I like most about the guys is really they're open to pretty much anything. Like, they're true music lovers. Like, they will listen to anything once, get a vibe for it, get a feel for it, see how they like it. If they don't, piece it apart, dissect it, smash it up, you know what I mean? Like, They take inspiration and can find inspiration from the strangest of things, and that sort of drives me to do the same. That being said, we all have, like, our own fringe tastes that, you know, either the others are less into, or maybe they don't spend a lot of time being, like, surrounded by it. It would be, I think, a specific for each of us to get into it, but I like a lot of, I like a lot of, like, electronica, EDM stuff too. I used to make, like, beats in college for fun, which was, you know, fun to fool around with in Ableton or something like that, with a few friends. And the other guys are into different things too, like different styles of, like, prog rock or metal. R&B and hip hop, or classical even, folk rock, stuff like that. It's quite diverse. But we all, like, one of my favorite times is when we're just driving around on tour and, you know, whoever's turn it is to throw up the Spotify mix or whatever, is there's always something new and we have to go through, like, the whole catalog just to process it. It's a lot of fun.
How did you end up agreeing on a style?
I don't know if we still agree on style. Like, I don't know if we ever agreed on style. I think that's why I like it so much and why I think it works for us is that I have an idea. Like, if I say I come up with, like, I don't know, some baseline for a demo or something like that, and I'll call Dave up and be like, Dave, I got a hotline. I need you to play over it. He'll say, sure. And I have this idea in my head, and then when Dave plays over, it's completely different. But it's also just way better because his input is, you know, way more valuable than something that I could ever come up with. We end up being, like, all together. You know, it's cliche, but it really is something greater than the sum of its parts. The way, like, the guitars come in or the vocals come in is nothing like I could ever write myself. These guys have their own distinct flavors that they add, and I think it's part of something that I think really makes us unique.
What do you personally bring to the band?
Personally, I feel like I'm interviewing for my own job right now. trying not to get laid off. I like to think of my role as, like, something of, it's kind of weird, right? Because bass is traditionally, like, it's this, sort of this tandem between, rhythmic and harmonic instruments that plays a supporting role, but can have, like, you know, lead flavors to it kind of thing. I think of someone like, when I look at someone like Thundercat, who's a big influence, you can hear someone like that guy and instantly go, okay, bass is front and center here. This guy's trying to make a show.
Yeah.
And it works for him, and he's awesome. And then you look at someone like, I take a lot of influence from like Jaco Pastorius, who plays, for example, his style had a lot of, like syncopated 16th notes and like a lot of harmonics that he incorporated into his bass lines. And I thought, you know, these seem kind of untraditional for the sort of, supportive low end role of the bass, but for some reason they work for what he was trying to do. And I think, so I guess what I bring is I try and emulate that sort of mentality, in that the bass can be a lead when it needs to be a lead, and it can support when it needs to support, but it should always be, it should always be a compliment, right? Just like everything else is. I think we've been described, I think, in the past as like a band with four lead instruments, and that's completely fair in a way. There's moments, I think, in some of our songs where we all try and stand out, and you sort of learn over time to divvy that up a little more evenly or like meaningfully, kind of thing. Like, I think back on some of our early demos or early stuff, and it's just an absolute, you know, party going on in parts of the tracks, and you go, and but for some reason, you know, I think some of it works quite well. Some of it may be a little, maybe we're having too much fun, but I still like it anyways. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, just sort of like the mentality of how the role changes, song to song.
Mm-hmm. So in 2018, Mauve Groove dropped their debut album, Hot Laundry. What was the band looking to create with that album? What was your sort of vision for the project?
Hot Laundry was basically all the songs we had written up until that point, scrap for, I don't know, a few older demo stuff that just, we never fleshed it out really, but it was written before, like the instrumentals were, I think like 80% of them were written before we even met CJ, which means when he came in, he basically had like a canvas to write on that was sort of pre-defined, so to speak. So I think at that time it was just the idea was basically to, you know, come in and experiment with this sort of live off the floor sound. We did everything basically, that we track it all at once. The three of us track it all at once, live off the floor, over the course of, I think it was 1 weekend, it might have been two, but I think it was 1 weekend. And basically just trying to get as much done as we could, you know, 14-hour days in the studio, you know, putting it together. And then CJ came in afterwards and sort of did his thing over top. He sort of wrote on top of it. So the album put together actually took a decent amount of time, because he had to do some writing and rewriting. He had to mix it and everything. So I think, like, there wasn't necessarily a strict vision with it at the time, just because of how we wrote it. But it definitely evolved into something that was like the base ingredients for something that we wanted to do for future songs, like the next songs that we started writing for our second album, for Lush, was more of a tandem effort. Like, we would write it all together, in studio or in practice and everything like that. And that had a little bit more of, I think, what we would call our current sound, because again, we're bouncing more things off each other in the moment, as it were.
Hmm. Did you say that you self-produced the album?
Yeah, we did the first album. My brother recorded it. We did it at the Harris Institute in Toronto, at the school, because he was a student there at the time. And then, yeah, basically, I took it away after with all the stems, and over a very long period of time sort of taught myself the basics and mixed it. Came out all janky, remixed it. Same thing. Probably remixed it a dozen times and still got to a point where I thought, okay, this is good enough. I can just put it out. And it's funny to see, like, listening back to it, how I sort of changed in my style over time, but sort of a relic of an era, which you gotta appreciate.
How did you go about marketing Hot Laundry? Did you focus on booking gigs, social media marketing, word of mouth, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. I think you sort of have to be multifaceted, really, at all levels. I think especially for new artists is you build your audience through, the strongest is obviously word of mouth, right? If your friend tells you you got to come see these guys tonight at this gig at, you know, a horseshoe or something like that, you say, okay, I'll check them out. And then of all the people who come out, you make, like, you know, maybe make half a dozen new fans who actually are interested in the music. Maybe a couple of them even come out to the next show and bring a friend of theirs. Starting out, I think just trying to play like as many gigs as we could get, trying to get experience there, getting to know the community and like meeting up with other bands and like supporting them, going to their shows and everything like that, because they were all in the same boat. And we liked playing with them, like, met some awesome people along the way. Just starting there, I think was a good way to do it at like the local level. Online's a bit different because it's sort of more, I think it's more concrete and yet more abstract in a way. Like it's more obvious, you know, you have numbers and stats and, you know, engagements and everything that you can track. But at the same time, there's a certain translation, I think, to the live market. So like you're getting, you know, a ton of views on your video or something like that that you put up, but then no one comes to your shows, you know, how worthwhile is it? How engaging is it really, kind of thing? I think you have to sort of be a little bit more, well, you sort of have to be clever on both fronts really, but the online thing is a bit more diverse. There's a lot of different ways you can go about it. I think at the end of the day is, and this goes for new artists as well for old, it's quality content has a lasting effect. But the actual like promotion of the brand and getting the word out is often takes a village, you know, with friends who are supportive and people with you're working with, like collaborators and stuff like that, to get the word out. Yeah, it's really like a total strategy, and some people do it very well. And, you know, some people are still trying to find their niche, I get. Which is probably the most important part, is at the end of the day, the music won't appeal to everyone. But we're trying to find people that will appeal to a lot in for certain song or whatever their taste may be.
So we're just going to take a quick second here and play a single from Mauve Grove. Colors is a track off of their 2021 album Lush and is a vulnerable single about falling in and out of love in adulthood.
Shut me in the chest. I didn't have my devil's parking meter.
Just joining us, this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Spencer Bridgewater, the bassist of Toronto hip-hop slash funk band Mauve Groove. So we just came back from playing a single off of the band's latest release, your full-length album Lush. What are the major themes behind the project, and how long did it take to put together?
Great question. Lush is a sort of a complex beast because it came about really over a period of probably like 2 years from start to finish. It was quite extensive just because we ended up doing a bunch of different, I sort of think of them as like eras of writing. Like when we first started is as a band right away, we wrote a lot, like incessantly. And some of those songs ended up being, tracks that were featured on Lush, and only after, you know, countless rounds of like revision and arrangement and stuff like that, did they get to the point they are now? And they almost look like a distant relative of where they started. But, in terms of like themes that we were trying to tackle, it was sort of, well, there's two sides of it. And one of them is the lyrical content side, and the other is the sort of, harmonic content side. I can mostly speak to the harmonic content. The lyrical content side, I know CJ was trying to approach it as sort of like a, overall like a story about, like personal struggle, things like relationships, self-reflection, anxiety, just reflecting on the immediate surrounding world and like sort of coming to grips with changing personally in like a big way. And I think it really is, you have to go through the songs, I think, specifically, but there really is like a lot of personal content in there that CJ drills down into, which is, I think, you know, the best kind of writing is something that comes personally but can appeal, you know, universally, or at least in an expanded format. And in a lot of ways, I think it does. But he tries to tackle like a lot of, really like a lot of tough issues, about a struggle, and the way he presents it in a way that we sort of provide this backdrop for him, rhythmically and harmonically is a sort of interesting, I think it's like an interesting juxtaposition to have the two side by side, because it's sort of, I think, an unusual palette for the like type of delivery he's going for and the type of content that he's trying to express. Is we definitely try and experiment a lot and take some sort of, you know, unknown turns wherever we can. Harmonically, the record we focused on, we really focused on challenging ourselves to dissect what it meant to be, you know, a little bit unusual in like traditional song structure or formats. Like instead of going instead of going like first chorus, there's songs on the record that go, like there's no chords, or they'll just go, here's part A, here's part B, here's part C, here's part D, and it's like this long story or winded, sort of like, I don't know, almost like an adventure through it where we try and tackle different styles, different sounds, but always like, it always go back to, you know, can we keep it groovy? Is it funky? Is it fun to listen to overall? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a priority.
Mm-hmm. What do you think has changed the most about the band and the way that you create music from Hot Laundry to now Lush?
I think the biggest change is, I think there's a certain, and this probably goes for a lot of bands too, is there's a certain, it's hard to say this in terms of like self-reflection, but it's a certain maturity that goes along with writing, and really that goes along with writing a lot over time, right? How you can essentially train your creative muscles to grow stronger in that they become more refined to nuances in like composition or arrangement, or is this really the best transition here, or does this even make sense to have a song that's this long or this short, or go this way, or do we need to dismantle it and think about what we're trying to say here, kind of thing. I think the biggest change is, with Lush is we started considering those questions a little bit more, intently, whereas Hot Laundry was, let's get it out. Let's get emotions out onto tape and express them as they come, essentially.
Do you have a favorite song on the project?
On Lush?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it changes day to day. Today, Colors is probably my favorite. I love So Rude. So Rude has a lot of nostalgia factor to it because it was the first one we wrote for the record. It just sort of like came as one of our first jam sessions, really all together. It just almost came out naturally. And really the skeleton was written in like that recording session. And then refined, you know, after several months after the fact. But it definitely has a place in my heart there. I really like Evil for a bunch of different reasons. I think it's challenging because especially just as a longer song, like it's hard, I think, for listeners in a sort of, especially in like the streaming world, to digest longer form content sometimes simply because it asks the listener, to linger and to really absorb like what's being said and what's being presented. But I think the benefit is I think it can be quite rewarding to, you know, get deep into something like that and try and figure out what people were trying to say or what they were trying to express. I like Evil just because it goes in so many different directions, with still having like a central theme that's overall like dark and brooding, but just so funky.
This was a project that you guys released during COVID. I'm not sure if you created it during the pandemic, but it was a project that you released now nonetheless. What problems did you encounter releasing an album during COVID-19?
So we did actually most of the recording for it before COVID. Most of the actual like technical stuff was fortunately finished just before COVID, which was, obviously that was great because, you know, trying to get into a studio then was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. But I think once you have the record like in your hand completed, is you want it to be heard, right? You want it to be out there, appreciated by people who you think will appreciate it. And in that, it's sort of hard to, as I said, like, I think the strongest way to get your music or your sound heard is through word of mouth, especially for smaller bands. And that's something that just wasn't possible, really. Like, right off the bat with COVID, is you couldn't go play shows and be like, this is our new song. Or we couldn't, you know, go to our friend's house and be like, dude, I brought you a CD, you know, check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of, the main challenges there is that it took a lot of thinking to sort of rewire that strategy, like that approach, how to get it out. And it ended up pushing it back, from our original intention. We wanted to get it out, you know, like throughout the summer and like going into fall and stuff like that. And we felt that it had to wait in order to be, I think, more received for a wider audience, just because, again, it sucks to just, it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling and accomplishment to put together a body of work like this and to put it out and then not be able to like go see friends or not be able to play shows or something. It's very stunting and like stops you dead in your tracks and you get all bummed out about it.
Mm-hmm.
So just waiting on that was a painful process, but I'm very stoked that it's finally out.
Yeah. Well, it's an awesome record. So congrats on that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So you also create music independently, under the pseudonym Teddy the Lesser. When did that start?
Last year in COVID as well, when like everyone, I was confined basically to my room and had to find a way to keep up playing music without actually playing music with people. So, it was just sort of a project that I wanted to challenge myself with, write a body of work and put it out before the end of the year. And I decided that sometime like, I don't know, July. So I started writing and pretty much all the songs on the record that I put out was written over the end of the summer. And then I just sort of sat on it for a while. And then mid-December, I was like, oh no, I have 2 weeks left in the year to meet this goal.
Mm-hmm.
And, I basically just rented a car, took all my gear up north into like this cabin in the middle of the woods and spent 4 days recording it there by myself, mixed it and put it out on New Year's Eve. And I could say that I completed my goal.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And I'd like to make more, but it won't just be me. I think I'd like to bring in other people. Get the feeling of collaboration again.
Yeah, for sure. How would you describe your sound on that project?
It's definitely like more of an, I'd call it like an indie vibe or like alternative vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Take a lot of influence from like, I mentioned White Denim, a lot of like Radiohead in there, a lot of like some folkier stuff too, a lot of like, I'm a big Elliott Smith fan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some elements in it where I think it touches on like more mellow concepts or approaches or something like that. I wouldn't call it quite so, sad really, but,
right.
Definitely a major influence for sure.
Mm-hmm. Is there like a general theme behind the project? I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Is it Cogito?
That's it. Mm-hmm. It was really something that I sort of wanted to express as like a, it was a track on it called Identity, and it really is sort of the flagship of the record, in that I wanted to like find a means for expressing myself personally without, you know, any other input or anyone else's input. And the reality is like, you know, I reflect on it as a complete failure, because I can't help but draw on like, on others, on my friends, on, you know, the people that I look up to in the music community, in the industry of highly influential people, and say, okay, this was me, but where did it come from? It came from what I've been listening to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So a successful failure.
Do you have a favorite song on that project?
I like Identity a lot. Mm-hmm. I like another track called The Bee a lot too.
Mm-hmm. What can we look forward to seeing from you?
With this project?
With that, with Mauve Grove, with anything.
Honestly, like the wheels are turning. I've been working on a lot of different things. My goal is to be as active as I can and make up for lost time, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
I was with Mauve, we have a lot of stuff that we've been working on, which is, I know this almost sounds cliche too, but like very different than the stuff that was on Lush, and I can't wait to get that recorded and get it out. We're super excited about it. It's different direction. Again, more experimental, more diving into places that, you know, we're not sure about or we're scared of, but we want to just because it's that's fun and that's what we're into.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So everyone, you can find Mauve Grove on Instagram, Facebook, and all streaming services as Mauve Grove. And yeah, thanks, Spencer, so much for talking with me. This is great.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, anytime. And to wrap things up, we've got a recent Mauve Grove single for you. Frisky Witness is the fifth track off of Mauve Grove's 2021 album Lush, and is a song about the nostalgia of times past.
Yes, this is Spencer Bridgewater. You're listening to Hawk Shots on Air on 101.5 The Hawk.
Father, forgive us. In a panic, not really religious. Sitting in my head, looking for forgiveness. Speaking to myself as if there's a witness. Reduce it to a coping mechanism that looks suspicious. So medicated, used to be emotionless. Not really into prayer, said I'm more superstitious. I said I'm more superstitious. That one time in lightning struck twice. Should've took that chance, should've took that chance. It all goes by in that glance. If you take that second chance. Not really superstitious, so medicated. Used to be emotionless, reduced to a coping mechanism that looks suspicious. Speaking to myself as if there's a witness. Sitting in my head, looking for forgiveness. Not really into prayer, not really religious. So, Hail Mary, please, Father, forgive us. I said it, Hail Mary, please, Father, forgive us. That one time when lightning struck twice. We should've took that chance, should've took that chance. It all goes by in that glance. Thank you.